Hello, and welcome to Getaway Day. This is episode 32. I'm Mason. He's Gautham. And with us today, we have a new member of the team, the official podcast cat, Mookie. Mookie Pets, the Rally Cat. You can call her Mookie, you could call her Mookie Pets, you could call her Rally Cat, you could call her pretty much anything. Biggest baseball fan in the house. She is now going to be with us probably every week because she's a lap kitty and will probably be on my lap most of the time. Yeah, so it's been a crazy championship series week so far. We wanted to wait since we had just done a preview video at the end of last week. We didn't want to go and start trying to recap the series the night of like game two or three. So we've pushed it off till tonight. And so we've now got almost five games on the books for the American League series and four on the books for the National League. So, Gowie, just overall thoughts on the championship series so far, just the last couple days, even if it's not baseball, how are things going for you?
Things are going good. In the NLCS, all the contests have been very tightly contested, and it's been a very entertaining series. I feel like Braves fans are on their just kind of remembering back to last year and hoping that their team doesn't pulled the old Atlanta trick of blowing a series lead. American League, we've seen a ton of offense, kind of like we expected, and that series has kind of gone back and forth here with Houston coming out on top in the last few games of the series. So I'm ready to dive in here and get talking about anything you want in this series.
All right, so there's been so much happening. I think it might be easier if we go sort of game by game and pick out kind of the big stuff that's happened and that we want to talk about. So do you want to start with the National League or the American League?
Let's start with the National League.
All right, National League. Game one, the Braves ended up taking that game to go up 1-0 in the series. And it was kind of crazy for a game one. So what happened in that game, Gowie?
Yeah, so Atlanta definitely felt like they had the leg up in this game because the Dodgers were really expended all their pitchers basically in the last series against the Giants. They didn't have Max Scherzer available in this game, so they had to go full bullpen game. And the Braves had their best pitcher, Max Fried, going, so that was definitely an advantage, Braves. And Fried did pitch very well. The Dodgers bullpen also pitched pretty well. They didn't really get much length from Tony Gonsolin. He only gave them 1 2/3. But the whole string of relievers kind of got the job done for the most part. There was a play in that game where Chris Taylor got caught between second and third on a Bellinger single. It was kind of a weird play. Jock Peterson threw to the cutoff man, which was kind of heads up instead of throwing straight to third base. Because if he had probably thrown to third, Taylor probably could have gotten back to second. But he was out there, and that didn't allow Mookie to bat with a couple of runners on. And then there was a big walk-off hit by Austin Riley to end this game.
Yeah, and Austin Riley, I feel like we've been talking about him the last couple of podcasts when we bring up the Braves, because just the second half of the season, and then so far in the playoffs, it seems like he keeps coming up. So it was really cool to me watching that game just to see Riley get that game-winning hit. It just kind of felt like it was bringing things full circle, just putting an exclamation point on what's been a great year so far and knowing that it's not done yet because it was game one of a potential seven. So, yeah, it was a crazy game. That Chris Taylor play on was probably the biggest play of that game, or misplay, if you will. And there's a lot of discussion on whose fault is it. Is it Chris Taylor's? Is it the third base coach? Which I can't remember who the Dodgers third base coach is.
I'm not sure.
But yeah, so but since it was in
I think it was in left center. So
it was in right center.
Really,
right center.
Oh, it was in right center? Yeah. Yeah, so it kind of is up in the air on whose call that should have been. But either way, big mistake there and probably cost him the game. Yeah. That's really my main thoughts there on game one. And then game two, to me, felt a little bit wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah, absolutely. Same script, basically. And this one, yep. though, the Dodgers did have Scherzer going, and he pitched 4 1/3 decently well, and then he got removed. And after the game, he actually mentioned that he didn't think he would be able to pitch as well as Alex Bessia, who was the reliever who came in after him. And that kind of shocked me, because if Max Scherzer is saying that he's tired, he's probably extremely tired, because he's not a guy that typically says stuff like that. He's the guy that wanted to pitch with a horrible neck injury in the World Series a couple years ago.
Yeah, he's a gamer for sure. So him admitting that he's probably not the right guy to be in the game at that point that early in the game, yeah, that's saying a lot. Because he's also the dude that'll try and basically walk away from the manager when he's coming out to the mound to take the ball.
Yeah, he didn't want to give him the ball that the other day in the wild card game.
And that's how I always kind of think of Scherzer, as being that guy that intimidates even his managers. But yeah, so that was definitely a little weird. But then the rest of the game kind of went exactly the same as game one. Because there was there was some crazy stuff that kind of happened there in the eighth inning, and I admittedly do not remember that eighth inning. Can you kind of walk me through that?
Yeah, so there was in the prior inning, Blake Treinen had come in the game as part of a double switch. So you're kind of thinking that Treinen's going to be the guy for two innings there, because that's kind of the rationale for why you would make a double switch. Steven Souza came in the game in the nine spot there. So Treinen finishes the seventh inning, no problem. The Dodgers are leading 4-2. But then the top of the lineup is coming up. So you got a couple lefties in Rosario and then Freeman and then Ozzie Albies, switch hitter. So they decide to go to Julio Urias in that spot. He's a guy that's pitched in the playoffs as a reliever, and he's been really successful at it. So I understand it from that perspective, but I also was kind of wondering why they didn't just stick with Treinen. He'd only thrown like less than 10 pitches in that first inning that he pitched. But regardless, they brought in Urias. Rosario gets on base. Then he tags up actually on a fly ball to left field. Pretty risky move considering they were down by two, but he does make it to second. And then there's a blooper by Ozzie Albies, which scores Rosario. And that play was really interesting because it was super shallow right field. Steven Souza fields the ball. He's probably 160 feet from home plate, and he throws the ball home, and it bounces twice before it reaches the plate. It was not a major league caliber throw by any estimation. Like it was an awful throw, and it probably 95% of other outfielders would have made that throw without a hop, and the runner would have been out. So I'll ask you, what do you think about that very aggressive send by Ron Washington? And keep in mind, they were down by two at the time, so that's not even like the tying run.
So in normal circumstances, I probably would have been asking for Wash's resignation on the spot. But, I mean, is Souza known for having a good arm?
I think he's
known
for having a bad arm.
Okay, so then it makes sense, because Ron, I think, does his scouting on the other fielders pretty well.
That's true.
He's pretty old school, so like his a lot of his analytics, or his game planning, is probably more on traditional stuff like that. less on probabilities for sins and more on who's actually in right. Is it a guy like, is it Mookie out there in right?
Yeah.
Or is it Steven Souza?
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And the Mookie thing is interesting because Mookie had moved over to center field at that point. And I think it all goes back to Max Muncy not being available in this series, because I think if Max Muncy's there, then you see Bellinger out in center field, and there's no reason to bring Souza in the game at all, and Mookie's still playing right field. So,
yeah. Which, I mean, even then, I still don't understand why this was the configuration they went with. I think there's still a very feasible way to throw a lineup out there without Steven Souza, leaving Belly in center, or putting Chris Taylor in center, Belly at first, Mookie in right. They've got other left fielders. I mean, heck, they've got AJ Pollock. They've got who else do they have that can play left?
It's mostly been Pollock and Taylor for the most part in left.
Yeah, but were they trying to play matchups, and so they put in Souza? What was the deal there?
Yeah, I think, well, it was mostly for that double switch, so they just needed a guy in there to go in the pitcher spot, but that may have been the only available guy they had on the bench. I don't remember the specific circumstance there.
Okay, so that would make more sense then, but I don't really see why. I don't understand that move by Dave Roberts, I guess is my point.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at when I was mentioning the double switch and why they even made it. If they weren't going to leave Trinan in for the second inning, it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
So, and then speaking of Roberts, is Roberts kind of getting a little too galaxy brain with his moves here? Did he need to bring Urias in? Did he need to do these opener moves for Urias in some other games? I mean, is he just kind of overthinking things?
So, I kind of liked the idea of the opener for Urias in the other game. Was that this game? No,
that was game five of the division series.
Yeah, that's what it was. I actually liked that idea.
Yeah.
It wasn't very effective. I mean, they won the game.
I think it was effective. Won the game. They kind of got what they were looking for. They got the outs in the first two innings before the bulk guy came in.
Yeah. Do I think in general he's trying to play chess when this game is, it's not as easy as checkers. Like, there's definitely other things that you can, he's trying to play he's trying to play 2D chess and a 3D chessboard, so he can think four steps ahead, but there's so many like other things that he can't control and that he's not thinking about, and so he is overmanaging a little bit, in my opinion. I think he needs to go with his gut. Like, they won 106 games in the regular season for a reason. It's a great team. They can play like that now. I mean, yeah, Scherzer is admittedly tired. That's a big problem if your guys are tired at the end of the year. But overmanaging doesn't really fix that. It can actually sometimes make it worse. So, I don't know. And he's kind of had a... People have always looked at Dave Roberts and in the postseason and been kind of judgmental about him as far as overmanaging is concerned, haven't they?
Definitely. It's been a topic for years and years now, and it's not going away, because in the postseason, every single tiny decision, whether it's really that impactful or not, is going to get picked apart and scrutinized. And that's just how it goes. But he's kind of asking for it with some of these moves that he is making.
Yeah.
I guess I'll go back to that, kind of what was going on in that game. So after the terrible throw by Souza, Riley hits a game-tying double, and then in the ninth inning, they get a runner to third base, the Braves, and Eddie Rosario faces Kenley Jansen, who has just come in the game, and he smacks the first pitch right up the middle for a walk-off hit off Seager's glove, who is kind of playing up the middle with the shift.
Yeah, so that's the part that was very much wash, rinse, repeat from game one. The weird managing in the middle kind of replaces the mistake on the bases from Chris Taylor in game one. And yeah, it just, it's crazy how well those two games paralleled each other to me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think the, see, now I'm trying to remember if game three followed kind of the same script. I don't
game three
think
was,
it did.
Game
it?
Three was definitely different. So in game three, in the very first inning, it looked like the Dodgers were going to, you know, run away with this game pretty easily because they had Charlie Morton kind of on the ropes. He gave up a homer to Seager on the second batter of the game. They were already down 2-0. Morton walked 4 in the first inning, and then he escaped, and then he was able to somehow get through 5 innings, even though he walked 6. And that was huge for the Braves bullpen because they were leaned on pretty heavily in game two because Ian Anderson was only able to pitch 3 innings in that game. And the Braves were really kind of just cruising along in that game. They got pretty timely hits from Jock Peterson after a blown strike call. He hit a single. Adam Duvall had a couple hits in that game. So they were kind of looking like they were in good shape. And the constant theme in all three of these first three games was that the Dodgers were not making the most of their opportunities to score. They were leaving tons of runners on base. It seemed like they kind of just, they were just on a cold streak. They were not hitting in these first three games. Then came the eighth inning, 5-2, Braves. Dodgers get a couple runners on base facing Luke Jackson. And then Cody Bellinger comes to the plate with one out. And he hits a ball that was at his neck level, at least 6 inches above the strike zone on the outside, just crushes it to right field for a home run to tie this game. And that just completely switched the script in the series.
So I think you're exaggerating just a little bit because I watched the play and it was at Melman from Madagascar's neck level, not Cody Bellinger's. It was like at least maybe 25 feet in the air. And then he put it like 10 rows up.
Yeah.
It was impressive. Cody Bellinger, I think, is finally, he's not playing like, he's still not like playing as elite as he did in his MVP season. But if you look at what he's doing right now and look at what he did in the regular season, oh my goodness, did he get hot at the right time.
Yeah, his OBP is over 500 in the postseason, so can't really fault him for what he's doing recently.
No, not at all. And he's still like the best defensive option they have at center. Well, maybe Mookie, but you prefer Mookie at his right field position. And then Belly gives you the ability to move him to different positions and things. So when he hits, he's so valuable to this team. So it great to see him get going. Game four, I think, starts now, right? Or started like an hour ago.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's see if he can keep, it going here in this game.
Yeah. So for an update on that game, actually, Eddie Rosario hit a home run. Also, Adam Duvall hit a home run, and Adam Duvall just robbed a home run, potential home run by Gavin Lux in center field. So 2-0 Braves.
All right, good deal. I am pulling for the Braves here, so I will be biased. I'm gonna throw that out right off the bat. Trying to put on that game here in the background, and it's starting to play the audio over. They're showing the robbed home run right now. That was a nice catch. It'll be fun to see how this game goes. All three games have been incredibly close so far. They've all come down to the last two innings. This is, in my opinion, an incredibly evenly matched series. I think we were talking about this before, that I think a majority of people would say that the Braves are like incredible underdogs. But we were kind of on more of the, I think it's closer than you expect. And they're playing really evenly matched. so far.
Yeah, so how do you think the rest of the series kind of shapes up?
Oof. That's a good question. I think there's a couple things it depends on, and it's mostly around your starting pitching. Because so Morton had kind of a rocky start, but got through five. Does he do that again? Does he figure it out? Is he just exhausted?
So with Scherzer coming in, Morton probably won't pitch again until game seven, though.
That's a valid point. And then Scherzer pitched in game two, so he would pitch theoretically. Let's see, travel day, game three, game four, game five, travel day. So he'd pitch in game six,
yeah.
Right?
So let's just go game by game for the remaining games. So here in game four, the Braves are going full bullpen game. They do not have a starter. They do not have a bulk guy, even with Waskar Ynoa having shoulder inflammation. He was the guy that was supposed to give them length in this game. So it's a distinct disadvantage against Julio Urías, who's pitching this game, otherwise, even though the Braves have already scored two runs here. So,
yeah, but we learned yesterday and throughout the entire season what the Dodgers are capable of. So even if you get up early on a guy like Urías, that's not – I wouldn't be comfortable with that. Let's just say
that. No, not at all.
You want to be up by, like, 23 runs? You want them to be throwing like Albert in on the mound, I think, ideally.
Yeah.
So this game is a long way from over, just sitting here in the bottom of the second right now. So who goes tomorrow then?
So tomorrow it's going to be Freed for the Braves for sure. He pitched game one, and then the Dodgers, that'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, do they try and bring Scherzer on short rest after he went?
Do they try to bring Buehler back on short rest? Because it didn't work so well.
Ooh, that's...
Wait, no, Buehler, what am I talking about? Buehler was yesterday. So it couldn't be him.
So, because they went bullpen game one,
yeah,
essentially,
so,
right?
So it may have to be another bullpen game in game five.
Unless they want to see if they could bring Gonsolin in for the start.
Yeah, and he would most likely... He also pitched yesterday, so... But yeah, he would definitely...
So they won't do that, then.
He'd be part of the mix, though, I think.
Yeah, but he wouldn't... If he gets the start, he's going to pitch 2 to 3 innings, and it is going to be a bullpen game. They're not going to try and have him pitch 4 or 5.
Yeah, for sure.
So, unless they don't have him pitch at all today, and then hope that he's just feeling great tomorrow.
Right.
Which I suppose is always an option. Let's see. Looking to see. I don't know why I'm looking to see which pitchers they've used already. It's only the second inning.
And then game...
I'm an idiot.
Game six, we'd have Anderson for the Braves, and then Scherzer.
And Scherzer.
And then...
But is Scherzer healthy?
Is he healthy?
Is he just exhausted? Like, what's going on? So,
big question.
I don't want to read too much into it, but he did very un-Scherzer-like things.
Yes.
So it makes you concerned, because this is what he's built for, is just the big games, and this is probably one of the biggest games. Because game six, if the Dodgers, or sorry, if Atlanta wins today,
then you feel holds their then lead, Atlanta should today. Feel pretty good because they've got Freed going tomorrow.
Yes. Now Braves fans will counter with, "Well, we were up 3-1 to them last year in the NLCS, and see how that went." I don't think they'll do it twice in a row. I think if they go 3-1, they're gonna get the fourth win.
Yeah.
It might be in Game Seven. I'm not saying it won't.
Yeah. I think this has a strong Game Seven potential.
Yeah. But I do feel pretty confident if the Braves can go up 3-1 this year, they will figure it out. Maybe Waskar Ynoa just needs another 2 days rest or something on his shoulder, and then he'll be okay. But we'll see. Because he is a big part of that bullpen. So it'll be fun to see what happens. And then if we get to Game 7, then... anything's on the table. I wouldn't even try and predict starters for that, because I think they'll try and bring someone in on short rest. And so we could do our best guesses right now, and I think Morton, they're going to be wrong.
Morton and Bueller. I think it's pretty clear.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Freddie just hit a home run. 3-0 Braves. How about that?
Fredward Freeman. It is Fredward, right?
Yep.
Frederick just seems to, meh. Yeah, so that's a crazy series, and definitely one to keep an eye on. So, yeah, if you like really well-matched, incredibly close games, this is the series for you. Don't even turn on the ALCS. Not worth it if you like close games. So, yeah. So anything else you got on the NLCS, or are you ready to switch over?
I think I'm ready to switch.
All right. So as I just alluded to, the ALCS, not even remotely like the NLCS. There are maybe a few similarities, and we'll get to those in a minute. Game one is the only game that was even kind of close.
Game four.
Yeah, I forgot about game four.
I mean, the final score wasn't close, but it was a close game.
That's fair. It did take it till the end of the game in order. Okay, yeah. All right, so game one and four were the only two close games throughout the game. So game one, Houston took the lead with the sac fly. Kike made an awesome catch in center that saved two runs from scoring there in the, I think it was the first inning. And then Kike came up, hit his third home run of the postseason in the third inning. He almost hit for the cycle in this game. He hit two home runs, a double and a single. So I wish that he would have just stopped at third on his second home run and then just refused to go home and they ruled it a triple. That's what I think he should have done. But, oh well. There were some pretty big or pretty key errors that allowed some scoring. Altuve allowed Bogarts to score on an error up at second base. And then Renfro doubled in some more runs. Michael Brantley got a hit in this game for Houston, extending his postseason hitting streak to 16 games, which is really, really impressive. Then we get to the sixth inning. Jose Altuve comes up, and he blasts a home run. Two-run bomb. It's to put him at third all-time in postseason home runs with 20. Hold that thought for two more games, because we'll get back to that point. And then in the seventh, Correa comes up and hit a monster home run, and he pimped it. He threw his bat, looked at his dugout, started tapping his watch saying, it's my time.
My time.
And slowest home to first that I've seen on a home run since maybe Jose Bautista in 2015.
The funny thing is that that home run would not have even been a home run in most parks. It was just because of the...
It was to the Crawford Bucks
right? Shot, yeah. So it's kind of fun. It was kind of a funny reaction for what it actually was.
Yeah. I mean, it was no doubt gone off the bat, knowing which park he was
in. Yeah, he knows his park for sure.
But, well, and even, like, I watched it, and I'm like, holy crap, that's gone.
Well, that's just because you saw his reaction, the upper, right?
Well, no, even, like, the contact on the bat, and it went to the, like, back of the Crawford boxes. It wasn't, like, a barely Crawford box
home run. I thought it was only, like a 350-foot home run.
How short are the Crawford boxes?
Pretty short.
But yeah, but it was a really fun game just from the back and forth there, the home runs. Kike hitting his two home runs, continuing his amazing postseason. Altuve tying it up, Correa hitting that bomb that he got he knew he got every bit of, and started bragging there. The story of the game for me, though, was actually in the pitching side because neither starter made it to the third inning. Both Chris Sale and Framber Valdez pitched 2 2/3 innings. Sale, 2 strikeouts, a walk, 1 earned run. Framber, 2 strikeouts, three walks and three runs, but only two earned. So it was a pretty much a bullpen game at that point. And so game one, having to cover 6 1/3 innings with your bullpen does not give me a warm and fuzzy feeling going into game 2, 3, 4 and farther into the series. So
definitely give credit to Houston's bullpen in that game, though. Specifically, Christian Javier, who gave them 2 innings, and he also gave them a bunch of innings in game 4. He is like their savior if their starters can't go deep at all.
Yeah.
And in that game itself, they only gave up a run in the 9th inning when they already had the lead. So great job by the bullpen for Houston.
Yeah, it was a great job really by both bullpens there. I guess less so for Boston. They did end up giving up 4 runs. So, but yeah, it was definitely an interesting game. And as great as Christian Javier did, I'm still worried that with that short of a start in game one, that's going to have ripple effects going on. And then we get to game two, and it doesn't really help the ripple effects. I guess, did you have anything else on game one?
Nope.
All right, so game two was nuts. There was a lot of history made here. So first inning, there was a leadoff double, and then I believe it was either a walk or a single, and then another single to load the bases. J.D. Martinez, his first at bat, launches a grand slam off Luis Garcia, who then ended up giving up another run there in the first inning. And he ended up getting pulled from the game after that first inning, giving up 3 total walks, getting 2 strikeouts out of the 3 outs. So I guess his stuff was there. He just couldn't locate, I guess, was probably the big thing. And then 5 earned runs on 33 pitches. So not what you're looking for when Framber only went 2 2/3 the day before.
And I'll add that he got pulled because he had knee soreness.
Yeah. So he probably would have gone deeper. And you could argue if his knee wasn't sore, he might have given up fewer runs. But it is what it is. This is where we got. So Jake Odorizzi comes in, and I believe he ended up throwing 4 innings.
4 innings. Does that sound right? And he, I heard him speaking after the game. He had no idea, obviously, that he was going to be coming in that game because he was an injury replacement. He ended up taking like 15 minutes to warm up on the mound because he hadn't started stretching or anything.
Yeah. And it took him a little while after he got into the game to get it going, because he ended up giving up a grand slam to Devers in the second inning. So 2 grand slams in the same game. First time that had ever happened for one team in postseason history. And then Odorizzi settled in and went another 3 innings. He did give up another home run in the 4th, though, to Kike for his 5th postseason home run.
It wouldn't be a postseason game without a Kike home run, would it?
Exactly. So Kike, that home run was tied for the most home runs in a postseason by a Red Sox player. I believe that's the stat that they had put up on the screen. I didn't write it down, but I think that's what it was. So pretty early on, this game was broken wide open, 9-0. Astros are done, right? Not so fast. The Astros put up some fight. In the 4th inning, they scored 1 on a Kyle Tucker double and then 2 more on a Yuli single. And then Eovaldi came out after 5 1/3. And then fast forward a couple innings. 9th inning was fun, because it looked like the Red Sox were potentially going to blow that game. Yuli and Jason Castro, of all guys, ended up both blasting solo home runs off of Darwinson Hernandez to make it 9-5 before Jose Altuve came up and hit what looked like it could have been a Crawford box home run, but it ended up just landing right at the track and ended the game there at 9-5. So Thoughts?
Yeah, so the Odorizzi, going back to the Odorizzi thing, he was definitely a candidate to start maybe game four of this series, and that just completely went out the window when he needed to throw 85 pitches in this game. He did save the bullpen in a way, but because it kind of looked like they were getting killed, but that kind of threw a wrench in their plans going forward. They were able to figure things out, but
yeah. And then just Eovaldi's line in that game, 5 1/3, 3 Ks, 1 walk, 3 earned runs on 81 pitches. So they got some good length out of Eovaldi. He did get pulled after giving up some traffic there in the sixth. But coming out at 81 pitches allows Cora to start thinking about bringing him in a game here in a couple days, which he did, and we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah, so then game three just continued to go the Red Sox way, and they put up monster numbers again. So in the second inning, Vasquez drove in a run on a single. Then Altuve made another error at second. It might have been ruled a hit. I didn't actually check the box score on that one, but ball ate him up at second base there, allowed everyone to advance, runner scored. And then Kyle Schwarber came up next and absolutely pulverized a ball right past Pesky Pole. So it was awfully close to the foul line, but he destroyed that thing. Third grand slam in 2 days. The Red Sox are now the first team in history to hit 3 grand slams in 1 postseason series. Then we had some more miscues on the Astros defense. In the third inning, Hunter Renfroe on first, steals second. Martin Maldonado throws it to second base. It's wild into the outfield. And then Renfroe takes off for third. And then the throw into third beats him, but is also wild and allows Renfroe to get to third on a stolen base at second. So, and then he ended up scoring on the next play, and then Arroyo hit a 2-run home run. So, and then Kyle Tucker drove in the 3 runs for Houston in the fourth on a home run. And then it was all Boston from there. JD Martinez, 2-run bomb over the monster in the sixth. Devers with an oppo shot over the monster in the eighth. And then closing out the game, Hunter Renfroe with a fantastic sliding catch towards the line. It's a really fun game if you like watching a lot of home runs and then Hunter Renfroe making some plays to make him look like Harrison Bader out there in right field. So,
yeah, and again, this theme of the Astros pitching, starting pitching, which was a very consistent thing for them all season long, and their pitchers typically would go very deep in games. This is a very different scenario than what the Dodgers are doing, where they kind of plan these bullpen games. All these starters were supposed to go deep into the games, yet they were not able to go deep at all. Jose Urquidy only going 1 2/3, giving up 6 runs, is really not what they were looking for after the short starts by Valdez and Garcia in games 1 and 2.
Yeah, meanwhile, Boston had the second day of great starting pitching.
Yeah, so at this point in the series, it's kind of looking like everything is going Boston's way after game one, that they're kind of in control of the series with the one-game lead.
Yeah. And then another fun fact that I noted. So Eduardo Rodriguez pitched 6 in this game. 7 Ks, no walks, 97 pitches, just flat out dominated the Astros lineup. When he came off the mound after the 6th inning, when he knew he was coming out of the game, he looked at Carlos Correa and did the watch thing.
And Alex Cora got very mad at him, started yelling at him. Yeah. But then Correa, after the game, said that it was really funny. So
yeah. So I enjoyed that. I thought it was, and it actually comes up yet again, that celebration does, so I thought that was fun.
It's my time.
Then, so everything's going Boston's way, right? That's what we've determined?
Yeah, and it continued into that next game.
Game four. All right, so now we've got Bregman actually hitting a home run in the third batter of the game, hit a home run, and then Bogarts pimped one over the monster for two runs in the bottom of the inning. It was his third home run of the postseason. And then we saw quite a few great defensive plays kind of in the middle innings. Bregman making a great stop at third. Devers making a great stop at third. Yuli with a great stop at first. And then comes back around. Jose Altuve comes up again. And apparently the baseball said something about his mom because he punished it and exiled it over the top of the monster to tie the game at two in the eighth inning. So we're now eight innings in, tied at two. This is looking like the closest game of the series. Gowie, you want to go ahead and fill us in on the ninth?
No, because I didn't actually watch the ninth, so I'll let you do it.
Okay, this was not a fun ninth. So Eovaldi ended up coming in after pitching great in game two for that 5 1/3 on 80 pitches. He comes in the ninth, and it was a big sad face. He gave up a leadoff double, and then I think he walked the next guy. Jason Castro singled in the leading run. Then Altuve was intentionally walked. And then Eovaldi came out of the game. I don't remember who went in to pitch. Was it Martin Perez? What game is this? Martin Perez in promptly gave up a three-run double. So there were four runs charged to Eovaldi 3 days after he gave a really good starting performance. So in total, there were seven runs given up in the ninth here to the Astros, completely changing the momentum in the series. So after four games, it ends up being tied coming here into game five. And in that game four, things were still not going great for Houston's starting staff.
Yeah, they were counting on Greinke. He needed to save the team, and all he could do was four outs. Not going to cut it.
So four outs, three walks, gave up two earned runs on that home run to Bogarts. And Pivetta for the Red Sox had another really good start. 65 pitches over five innings, three Ks, two walks, only giving up one earned run. So Boston seems to be doing everything right. They're crushing the baseball. They hit 10 home runs in the first four games of this series, three of them for grand slams. Their pitchers, other than Sale in the first game, getting not lengthy starts, but good starts. And then Eovaldi was not ready coming back off his start, put in to close out the ninth inning. I guess it wouldn't be closing it out. It was tied at two, but trying to get him into the bottom of the ninth, still tied. So, yeah, so it's been a really weird series. And that's not even to mention the game that neither one of us watched that happened today, which ended up being 9-1 Houston. So after the big momentum shift, then Houston ended up scoring in the second inning on an Alvarez home run. And then they put up a five spot in the sixth inning, scored again in the seventh, and two more in the ninth. And Boston only managed to get one run across the board on a Rafael Devers home run.
Yeah, so the big story there is that after those four consecutive very short starts by the Houston starters, Framber Valdez was able to give them eight innings of one-run ball, which they vastly needed. And it's amazing that it seemed like they woke up on that Altuve home run in game four in the eighth inning that tied the game. And they have just been – they remembered that they're the Astros and they can hit, and they've been hitting ever since then.
And then Framber thought that he was 2019 Verlander.
Yep.
And came out here and threw eight. And so resting all of those guys who have been completely overworked and overtaxed and stuff.
Yeah, and with the day off tomorrow, the bullpen has two full days basically where they didn't work. They should be all ready to go, juiced up for game six with a chance to go to the World Series.
Yeah, so it was looking all Boston for 3 3/8 games.
Yeah, basically.
And then all of a sudden, in 10 innings, this series is just flipped entirely. And at this point, I don't really see a way that Boston wins the series.
They just got to outslug them. That's their only way. And it's worked for many of these games in the postseason so far. But
yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely, they definitely can outslug them, but their offense cooled off here in the last two games, too. So, they cooled off, Houston's getting hot, can the off day tomorrow for the travel day back to Houston, can that help reignite this offense? Can the Crawford boxes help this offense? And then can their pitching continue to be good to hold Houston's really, really, really good lineup to less runs than they put up? I mean, heck, the scores in this series have been ridiculous. So 5-4 was the close game, which is still significant amount of runs. 9-5, 12-3, 9-2, 9-1. So
first to nine wins the game, essentially.
Pretty much. So, I don't know. I don't I don't really have a whole lot of faith in Boston pulling this one out. They did get a really good start from Sale today compared to his first game. But I think at this point, their staff is also kind of getting a little tired.
So let's talk path for the Red Sox to get back in the series and potentially win it. So Alex Cora did mention that even though Eovaldi pitched in game four, he would be available to start game six. So they're going to need him big time to come through. And he's been pretty good in the postseason overall.
How many innings did he pitch in game – or not innings, how many pitches did he throw in game four?
He threw – wait.
24 pitches.
Yeah, 24, so – and that was like the day that he would normally would have had his side session. So it shouldn't be too much of an impact. But as we've seen with Scherzer pitching that one inning in Division Series Game 5 and then coming back 3 days later, he seemed out of it. He didn't seem like himself.
Yeah. Well, and there's definitely a difference between your side session between starts
and game action. Yeah. High intensity. Yeah,
game action and a tied game. So I don't know. I hope he can figure it out and he can get through five without giving up too many runs. I kind of expect him to not be completely locked down just based on that whole logic. But we've seen what Eovaldi can do in the postseason, so he can definitely do it.
And then the Astros will be going back to Luis Garcia, who's apparently okay. His knee's okay, so he's going to try to pitch that game. No clue how long he goes or if he's effective at all, but they don't really have many other options at this point.
Yeah, but like we said, the bullpen is going to be pretty well rested at that point.
Yeah, they've been impressive.
Yeah, so even if he only goes three innings, they have a 3-2 series lead. The bullpen is rested. They've been really good this series. If they can get the lead, I think they'll be able to hold it. So,
and then in a potential game seven, what does that look like? So,
potential game seven is probably going to look like Eduardo Rodriguez and Urquidy.
I think so, with Christian Javier to back him up.
Yeah. So. Yep. So it'll be interesting. Do you think this one's going to go to game seven?
I think Houston pulls it out in game six at home.
In game six? That's kind of what I'm thinking, too. Like, I could be wrong. This could very easily go to game seven.
Yeah.
And this is probably the more likely one, just statistically. This is more likely to be the seven game than the Atlanta and LA series. Especially now there's a four-run lead in the fourth. So, four-run lead.
Yeah, they scored a couple more. Jock had a little hit in there. So, Braves are doing well.
And you didn't yell Jocktober?
No, I thought it was too much.
Fair. But yeah, so we'll definitely be watching these games, and we will update you again here early next week, probably right after the series is over and we're doing a World Series preview.
Yeah, Monday.
Monday and the series are both over?
Monday, World Series preview. World Series starts on Tuesday.
Good deal. I hadn't looked at the schedule, so I had no idea what we were looking at. So we'll be back here Monday, and we'll either be looking at... So I think we're going to be looking at Houston and Atlanta on Monday. As of right now, who do you think we're looking at?
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think that's most likely. I mean, I'm never going to count the Dodgers out, though.
Yeah, and I wouldn't count out the Red Sox right now either, but...
That's the way we're trending for sure. And that's who has the lead in the series.
I would hedge my bet, definitely. But I'm going like 55% that it's going to be Atlanta and Houston.
And I'm always rooting for Game 7, so hopefully we get at least one.
Yeah, we got to have some kind of craziness, right? So, all right, cool. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. So thank you for hanging out with us, and we will catch you on Monday.